results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, and why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, up against the Canadian border. Cold and windy today, our AccuWindow forecast. Happened to be the time of year when German communities up here enjoy various kinds of fests. And it's an interesting time to be in the Northwest. If you ever get a chance, you should come up here, travel up here, and meet the people that feed the world. The solar wind tonight is 312 kilometers per second, and the proton count is way down to 2.2 protons per cubic centimeter. The sun, again, is blank. Not a single spot from the solar cycle 24 in months. And there is no coronal hole. If an aurora happens tonight, it will not be caused by the sun. Since the first confirmed discovery of an exoplanet in 1995, more than 300 planets orbiting other stars have been found. Most of these discoveries were made by the radial velocity method. We also call this perturbation theory. It's measuring variations in the star's relative velocity, in other words, the wobble of the star caused by the planets going around it. Astrometry is a complementary technique to the radial velocity method. The PRIMA, or PRIMA, facility with TNO's star separators was successfully tested during a first flight test at the beginning of September. PRIMA will set a new benchmark in astrometry and will enable exoplanet detection with high-precision astrometric measurements, as well as imaging of faint objects. The European Southern Observatory, ESO, has built the PRIMA, which is the phase-referenced imaging and micro-arc-second asymmetry facility, on the Very Large Telescope Interferometer. That's the VLTI. Oh, we just love acronyms in science. And that's in Chile. And that's an interesting unit in that it has sort of active noise cancellation, so it cancels out the twinkle that we see as looking through stars with our naked eye through our atmosphere. Maybe has taken a little bit of the romance out of looking at the stars, but nevertheless, now they can get much, much clearer pictures from the ground than ever before, and at a fraction the cost of launching telescopes into space. Anyway, TNO's star separators have been installed on two VLTI auxiliary telescopes. We should see some very remarkable things come out of that in the next year or so. The discovery of exoplanets, planets outside our solar system, far out into the galaxy, is probably the most exciting astronomy or astrometry out there. One of the exciting things is to find new stars, but of course, we're always looking for that elusive M-class planet that might have our cousins out there. In a few days, the launch window for China's Shenzhou 7 space mission will open. The mission is apparently slated for liftoff at 9:10 p.m. Beijing time on September 25th. That's 4 days from now. This flight will carry three astronauts for the first time and include China's first spacewalk. Zhai Jingang has been designated as the astronaut who will carry out this historic task. You always wanted to know what they're doing with all the raw materials they're buying. What's more, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how they're paying for the Chinese space program. American interest on the national debt. Last week on X Squared Radio, we ran an archive. We appreciate your patience and also for enjoying the archives. From time to time, I do have to travel at the exact moment when I'm supposed to be sitting down in front of the microphone. And fortunately, we have hundreds of hours of good interviews, excellent interviews with great people in the archives, and we'll stick them on and run them as though I were really here. Yes, I'm really here today. The week before that, we had William Buhlman on the program, and as usual, 3 hours was not long enough to cover everything he can explain about out-of-body experiences. If you're not a subscriber to the X Squared Radio Archives, it's as easy as can be. Just $20 a year will give you access to hundreds of hours of interviews with the finest experts in the world on everything paranormal, except for ghosts and conspiracy theories. Tonight is the night we allow the other experts to come on the program and contribute. You. There are some very amazing things happening out there right now, and you are right in the middle of it. We would like to hear from you, so the phone lines will be open and free for the next 3 hours. Toll-free, U.S. 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, we also have a toll-free number for you, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else, on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154 or 5185. And if you're using Skype, simply put in BBS Radio. And Pal Talk, you listeners, just enter BBSRadio_com. We are coming to you live through the BBS Radio Network and also through the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. We try to bring a little bit of the space news to you each week. It's kind of a good way for everybody to get settled in. Most people to this station for the last 3 years have been listening while they're sitting in their office or their home and they're working on their favorite project and they pull up the archive. But that's about to change because BBS Radio although already clearly documented as the largest internet network of radio hosts in the world, is now about to cross over onto the dark side, the broadcast side. So those people that are riding around in their cars or driving trucks across the country will get to listen to us as well. And we are grateful for that, grateful for the efforts that are done at the home office of PBS Radio out in Paradise, California. Well, many people ask me about the physics of the soul. I've done a short tour this year, not nearly as many speaking engagements this year as last year, just because my day job has required more of my time to get this first biodiesel plant up and going. But I do intend next year to resume that. However, I have recorded 4 hours of the workshop of the physics of the soul, and if you would like to participate in that, you can always order the four-hour DVD set. It's only $20 for the whole 4 hours. And Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years, Part 2 of that book, is the workbook for the Physics of the Soul class. So you'll not only have the textbook, but you'll also have the video to go with it. And all you have to do is add Maureen St. Germain's meditation CD with that, and you'll have the whole toolbox. Some claim that there are star children on the earth. Some say they are walk-ins, or that they are in touch with a higher self that exists in another dimension or a parallel universe. These connections provide them with special insights, even premonitions about what is going to happen to them. In some cases, it has saved their lives, it has allowed them to find the love of their life, and it has even helped them plan a successful and very rewarding career. What a neat thing to have in your back pocket, such a connection, such an ability to know what is going to happen and know what it is you're supposed to be doing, what the purpose of life is, how to handle the unexpected things that come to us in our lives. Well, tonight we are going to talk about some distinct types of consciousness changes that have been manifesting themselves in a big way lately. Only we're going to try and do it from a scientific point of view. We get enough metaphysics and enough speculation. Let's try to look at this from a scientific point of view and see if you agree with me. And if you don't, or if you do, either way, please give us a call tonight. We'll discuss it. And those millions of people who will listen to this archive will share in your discussion. The first type that I want to talk about is the awareness that you have lived in a previous mortal life. Some call this reincarnation. Now, there are some good historical examples we might pick. How about Beethoven or Mozart? Various scientists, mathematicians, and even military strategists. What apparently happens is sometime in one's youth, the most common age is 9, the flickering memories of another lifetime begin to come through, almost subliminal at first, like a few frames of an old movie sneaking their way into the theater of your mind, or like flashing across the radio dial, you hear a familiar voice or a piece of music, and then you can't quite get back to that exact spot again, but you heard it. And maybe even walking down the sidewalk of various culinary establishments, and you catch a smell that reminds you of something you shouldn't have a memory of, like apple pie cooling in the windowsill of a 19th century plantation, or the smell of damp cobblestones under the fog of London, and you've never been there. these kinds of things awaken people. They seem to be like a deja vu, a kind of, I feel like I've been here before. Or, I know how to operate that, I know how to play that, and you've never held it before in your hands. So for the vast majority of people, we just kind of let it go, and we bury it in the noise of our everyday three-dimensional lives. How we are going to make our next car payment or keep from losing our job can make a very loud hum at times. Waking up in the middle of the night with your heart jumping out of your chest with worry is not conducive to the serene communion with one's past lessons learned. I know you know what I'm talking about. So I guess as a scientist, we would ask the question, a binary question, yes or no, is it possible that we human beings have and yet will live many lifetimes? Yes or no? Well, let's just take it that way. If the answer is no, then there are some things for which we need closure. First, since the purpose of life is now truncated into one mortal experience, why do some of us get to live a life of luxury and health, while others are forced to live a short and miserable life of captivity and starvation? That doesn't seem fair, does it? Who designed this mess anyway? One mortal life. I only get one. I don't want to have that one. Gee, doesn't sound like a very efficient plan. Not something a scientist would put together. Well, okay, maybe a civil engineer. But certainly not a scientist. People tell me that God has set it up this way. We get one shot, one probationary chance to live a model mortal life. And if we get killed along the way, oh well. If we get rich along the way, that's great. But if you get sick or have everything stolen from you, then, well, I guess it sucks to be you. Some God, huh? I'm not going to say I have a problem with that because, you know, maybe that's what you believe. But if it is, give us a call. Phone lines are open, toll-free, 888-228-4494 in the U.S., 877-489-6350 for Canada, and anywhere else on planet or off planet. There's a cell phone tower just about everywhere. 530-776-5154 or 5185. And we do take Skype calls and Pal Talk calls. So give us a call and we'll talk about it. Oh, we're not supposed to talk about religion in the workplace. We're not really. You're listening on your computer with your headphones, so we're not really discussing it. It's okay. The second thing that needs closure is to explain why there is desire. Yeah. That's what I said. It is a scientific term. Desire is the one thing that separates man from the animals. Oh, by the way, it also separates man from the angels. Angels who express desire fall to earth or are cast into outer darkness, according to the ancient records. So the question is, why do we desire? How do we desire? What in the world is this individuality that we have? The ability to choose and perhaps even be chosen. Two good things to think about. One probationary shot, and why are we given desire? The third thing is the idea of evolution. Humans are unique, to be sure. And the notion that we evolved from another life form on this planet has no basis in empirical study. Sorry, all you Darwinians out there. No basis in fact whatsoever. Now, I'm not saying that we are not evolving or that we have not evolved. Far from it. I'm just making the observation that we did not evolve on this planet. Not possible. Not possible. many varieties of humans with various capabilities, and yet their genetics aren't but one or two markers different. Not possible. If we would have evolved on this planet, we would have evolved with an advantage, which we do not have. We have a short lifespan. We're prone to viruses and breakdowns. We have thin and brittle bones. We do a terrible job of protecting ourselves from disease. Can't drink nasty water. We can't eat raw meat. We don't have enough body hair to withstand a decent Scottish winter. Sorry, didn't evolve here. Came from somewhere else. Maybe it's one of those exoplanets out there they're trying to find. That would be interesting. So let's take the first hour and see if you can help me prove or disprove the one life, one chance theory. By the way, one of the most brilliant statisticians I ever knew taught me to make sure to examine the author of a study before I did anything else. You know, the kind of study that says eating beef will promote long life and a healthy libido. Beef, it's what's for dinner. You know, the one sponsored by the American Beef Council. Or the one that advises everyone to have at least 3 helpings of white bread every day, paid for by the people at Wonder Bread. I'm still trying to find out why 1 of 5 dentists did not recommend Crest as a toothpaste. Yeah. You always have to look at the author of the study. Who published the study? The idea that we get one life and one chance is a new idea, I hate to tell you that. Even the books of the Old Testament, which are quoted many times in the New Testament, mention the idea that we exist many times. Before you finish reading the book of Genesis, you will be introduced to 5 races of beings. And 2 of the races speak openly of high-level involvement in other worlds. So, there you go. And I could pick up a dozen other ancient texts if you want. The Kabbalah, the Zohar, the Sefer Yetzirah, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Popol Vuh. How many cultures would you like to draw from? Before I make my point that the idea that we have one life and one shot is a relatively new idea and was published, that's right, by religionists. It is almost always the case that an idea published by the very body that stands to gain the most may be profoundly skewed and invalid. So that's where we are. A skewed and invalid idea. And I intend to make my proof pretty irrefutable. And if you'll call in and discuss it with me, I think I can make my case. Not trying to convince you of anything except what I'm trying to convince you of, and you'll find that out as we go on. I know the suspense is killing you, but believe me, the journey will be worth it. Herein lies the awakening, one person at a time. The human race is opening its eyes and realizing that we are not mere chance results of protein games. You know, protein games where you roll dice over and over and over again. Well, let's take another example. Let's make it really simple. Not 1 out of 6 chance. Let's take 1 out of 2. Let's take a 5-gallon bucket with 1,000 quarters in it. Take that bucket to the top of a stepladder and dump it out over a concrete floor. What you will see at first is a rain of silver, and what you will hear is several seconds of chaotic ringing. Then it will stop. Gravity will win as the potential and kinetic energies are changed into other forms and are absorbed by everything within earshot. The quarters will be lying on the floor in one of two positions, unless one or two rolled to a stop on their side. Come on, heads or tails? Here we go. Heads or tails, what would you imagine? Well, besides having a floor covered in quarters, the answer is academic. They are all different quarters having a mutually exclusive opportunity to become heads or tails. It is most likely that there will be 500 heads and 500 tails. And if this were repeated 10 times, making it 10,000 quarters, the average would get even closer to 50-50. Odds are a normal distribution will occur if it was done 100 times. But the odds of it becoming more than 48% one way, more than 49% one way, are better than it getting 60-40. Not going to happen. Now, that's the way the evolutionists would have you believe proteins fold and unfold over and over and over again. And every once in a while, they make a mistake. You end up with a flaw. Or, just as likely, you end up with an improvement. Something that gives that being a survivability advantage. Like mobility, or the ability to run faster, the ability to pick up heavy things, or the ability to eat raw seeds, or survive malaria. Yeah, something odd happens in the protein. But we all know where proteins come from. Every molecular biologist knows this. Proteins come from genes. Genes come from DNA. Without those, you can't make the other. The interesting thing is that the DNA, the genes, aren't high enough in number to make all the proteins that the human body requires. Human body requires, on average, between 120,000 and 140,000 proteins in order to function, in order to build and repair itself and digest and see and all of those things and think. Well, we don't have nearly that many genes, only about 25,000 gene pairs. That means that each gene has a choice of proteins that it can make. And that choice is governed, yeah, you guessed it, by its environment. What you eat, where you live, how hot it is, how cold it is. And your consciousness has an effect on those genes. It's true. It's true. Identical twins have been checked over and over and over again. Thousands and thousands of cases have been studied. And it's true. At birth, identical twins have exactly the same genes. Later in life, even though they've been wearing the same clothes, living in the same household, almost having identical lifestyles, except they marry different people and they have different personalities. Guess what? Their genes change. Their genes change. Their look changes. Their body weight changes. Their skin color can even change. Their hair texture can change. That's pretty amazing. We're not talking about congenital changes. We're talking about changes that are made to the genes of that person by that person. Because the person inside the body has a different design in mind. So, let's make an alteration to the quarter experiment. Let's try this. Let's take groups of quarters and we'll connect them to one another with a small thread. Now, we could drill a really small hole and tie the thread to the quarters or superglue the thread to the quarters. And for now, let's pretend we only connect one thread to a quarter and then tie knots about every 4 inches away from the quarters to make a sort of snowflake instead of a spider web so that the quarters are free to twist on the thread. Now, we could make groups of 10 or groups of 50 or even groups of 3 or 4. We could do all of the above. And when we're forming these little groups, let's just try to keep the number even for future reference. And then, now, we've got all that done, all those quarters, groups of quarters, 10s, 20s, 40s, tied together with the thread. Oh, they can still twist, but now, let's repeat the experiment. Aha, now we have changed the dynamic of the release of the energy. It is no longer chaotic. Now the groups of quarters are only free to twist on the string. They cannot flip freely as before. Now what would you expect would happen if you dump the quarter or the bucket out on the floor? Well, I can tell you now, the results could be very broad indeed. We could get 40% heads. We could get 35% tails. These are results that are well outside the range of probability, assuming the system's new dynamics. Now, the only thing that we've done, really, is we've changed the evolution of the mix. Now, we have entangled the quarters into pairs and groups of pairs. And now, they affect one another as they exert their energy to land one way or the other, sort of pulling each other, influencing each other. One might say that we have interfered with the free flow of energy by adding the string. But what if the quarters were not coins? What if they were proteins? What if they were protons, photons, or even electrons? What if the strings connecting them were not visible, but in fact not visible to any of our instruments, and yet when we flip one subatomic component, its pair flipped instantly, no matter how far away it was? Ah, ha, ha. Now we've completely changed the dynamic. Now when we affect the spin of one coin, one proton, one photon, one electron, the other flips instantaneously. Now the last time I looked, man, at least the body of him, was made from the dust of the earth. Yeah, mixed with a little salt and water. So, if the matter that makes up the human body, all those proteins we were just talking about, is also the matter that makes other groups of peas and carrots and wheat, and thus rabbits and beef and birds and whatever else we might consume, omnivores that we are, then, gosh, we've woven a string through everything. We wove a string through the planet. We wove a string through us. We wove a string through them over there. And now, how they treat themselves, how we treat ourselves, how we treat them, how they treat us, it all has an effect. Now the probability has changed. Now the evolutionary engine is really empowered and driven by the intention of us. Well, now we're getting somewhere. Well, we have about 5 minutes left in this hour. We did get a little bit of a late start. We'll get right back on schedule. Our phone number is toll-free, U.S., 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, 877-489-6350. And anywhere else on planet or off planet, you guys that have free nights and weekends, this is no problem. It's 530-776-5154 or 5185. And of course, you can reach us Skype, BBS Radio, and PalTalk at BBSRadio_com. We are coming to you live for 3 hours through the BBS Radio Network and also through the Steel Eye Media Network. And tonight you are part of the program. You are the guest on X Squared Radio. Well, let me toss this out there, because in the next hour I want to push this as we normally do in the third hour. I'm going to push it in the second hour and really try to get you thinking here, really try to get you to help participate in this experiment. Let me toss this out there. What if the string is actually consciousness extended between two mates? Now, they could be mates of protons, mates of neutrons, mates of electrons, photons, people. I know this sounds a little metaphysical, but hear me out. One of the things we physicists have to admit is that we are rather lacking in our ability to detect the universe. We were just talking about PRIMA, the phased array that's being used in Chile to tune out the interference of our atmosphere so that we can discover exoplanets. We've discovered about 300 since 1995, and we're trying to find another Earth out there. But we think ourselves advanced because we can detect photons or waves that have managed to survive for billions of years and reach our little sensors. We can see light, radio waves, X-rays, gamma rays, and even getting closer to sensing gravity waves. But the truth is that this makes up only about 1/20th of the universe. The dark and undetectable universe is there because we can see the resulting gravity from its presence. But we cannot reach into that dimension yet and tell you what it is made of. Ah, but it is connecting everything. So what I want you to consider, and this is a little bit personal opinion, but I want you to consider it, just write it down, put it on your fridge, look at it every day, and see what kind of feedback you get from this. I want you to consider the idea that we approach dark matter and dark energy as the subconscious of the universe. That is a very advanced thought. We know already that the human subconscious runs as much as 1,000 times faster than the conscious mind. We also know the closer we bring our conscious mind to our subconscious existence, the more effective we become at doing everything we dream of, right? I mean, if you fall into dreamland and have a subconscious epiphany and you can't bring it to your conscious mind, there's not much you can do about it. Not much you can clear. Not much you can advantage of it. Oh, a dream. I dream of. Yes, I said that, didn't I? Well, let's come back to that later. We'll talk about dreams in a little bit. The subconscious mind can run in automatic without another thing added to it. Of course, left to its designs, humans can and often do act like animals, all passion and no deep desire to guide it. So we see people like that all the time, running unconscious, not subconscious, unconscious. What we're going to try to do tonight is turn on the consciousness. We're all conscious beings. Some of us are just not conscious. We're conscious. So we're going to try to awaken that. And I want you to pay close attention, because we're going to cover some pretty advanced things here in physics and metaphysics, and maybe even play a little bit around the fringes of religion, but not too deeply on it. We try not to get too wrapped up in the religiosity of the thing. But, of course, our phone lines are open, and we'll be here for another 2 hours. Right now we'll take about a three-minute break, 3.5 minutes, and we'll be back right after these messages. Don't go away. We'll come back with more X Squared Radio. foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. We're glad you're here. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. AccuWindow forecast is cold and windy outside. Typical Scottish summer. You know, global warming and peak oil are two problems out there. One thing's for sure, we're wrestling with it. The volatility of the oil markets are only a small indication of the scope and breadth of this problem. But there is an answer, and the answer is algae biofuels. And there's five reasons why. Algae produces 100 times more oil per acre than traditional food oil seed crops like corn or soy. Number two, algae eats CO2, the major global warming gas, and produces oxygen. Three, algae requires only sunshine and non-drinkable salty or brackish water. Four, algae does not compete with food crops for either agricultural land or freshwater. In fact, it can produce fertilizer, food, and even fodder for ethanol, which is one of the workable reagents for biodiesel. Number five is algae can reproduce itself and its oil every 6 hours, while it takes Mother Nature millions of years to produce crude oil in the ground. The answer is green. Real green. Now that's solar energy. And by the way, that oil can be turned into diesel fuel very, very easily. If you want to do more research on that, just go to X Squared Radio, click on the Green Star USA link, and you can learn everything you want to about up-and-coming new and renewable energy sources. And you did hear the commercial for the Discovery Store. I highly recommend, but only if you have kids, even kids big as me, highly recommend that you go to the Discovery Store for your Christmas shopping. Go to x2-radio.com and click on the Discovery Store link. Do it once a week. It's more fun than eBay. They have the coolest stuff, not only telescopes, but also NASA clothing and hats and models and games. There's tons of stuff there. Great ideas that will stimulate the scientific mind in your child, even if he's as big as me. Last hour, we began to talk a little bit about dreams, and I don't mean the kind of dreams that you drift off asleep. I meant the dreams that are your core desires. A lot of times I ask people in interviews and when I'm out doing expos and speaking engagements, I'll ask people, you know, what is your dream? And, well, you'll be surprised at the answers that I get. I'll share some with you later. But the main thing I want to get into right now is that we address this evolution idea once and for all so we can lay the foundations for this amazingly beautiful and eternal existence. Here are some postulates that we can write down. A postulate is a mathematical law, like an axiom, something to which we can attach other things, and the thing to which we attach it will not move, like a stake in the ground, like an anchor, like a JoJo tree, something that just isn't going to fall down. Here you go. Number one, we are eternal beings having a mortal experience. That's it, plain and simple. Eternal beings having a mortal experience. I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago, I wasn't doing anything on a Saturday, and doing some channel surfing, came across a house marathon. It is a series on TV about a physician whose last name is House. And he is not very popular. In fact, nobody likes him, but he's a brilliant diagnostician. And also, unfortunately, completely atheistic. And being faced with death of his patients on a regular basis, some of whom he delivers the right diagnosis to deliver them from it, and others he does not. But in a couple cases, he had the opportunity in this marathon to make the statement that there's nothing after you die. This is it. We are nothing more than a bacteria on this planet, consuming, respirating, replicating, protecting ourselves from enemies and from disease if we can, and then we die. Sounds exciting. No. We are eternal beings having a mortal experience. Number two, birth is the reconnection of a spirit being with a physical form that is made of DNA and various minerals and salts and water. That you can take to the bank. Birth is a physical reconnection of a spirit being with a physical form. Yes, I said reconnection, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. And the third one is, the universe is the sum and exists at the average of the intentions of all sentient beings in it. That's right. So So if there are 6.8 billion live beings here on this planet, then you take that and multiply it by the number of stars out there, the number of planets orbiting those stars, the number of other populations on each one of those worlds, and what you have is the average of the sum of all of those intentions. You remember I told you about the quarters, 1,000 quarters left to spin, and you flip them over and over and over again, flip them 1,000,000 times, which would be 10 billion flips of the quarters. The more you flip them, the more normal the distribution looks, and the more perfectly the mean lines up with the 50-50 spot. We find a lot of this in nature. Yin and yang, positive and negative, male and female, binary existences, light and darkness, opposition in all things, normally distributed about the mean. Except, if you remember, we had the ability to skew that a little bit by connecting the quarters together. So they don't all flip independently. They flip in pairs and groups of pairs. Well, suffice it to say that there is barely a religion on the earth today that would disagree with these postulates. Now, notice I did not say out and out that we are born in mortal form over and over again. To that, most modern Christian religions would object because they just do. Those things were written out of the Bible, the Biblio, the library of collections that we have that are canonized by leaders who know more than we do about what God really wants us to know. But the fact that we reconnect with the physical form, they probably would not argue with. Now let's consider the energy and coordination it takes for the first postulate to occur, that we are eternal beings having a mortal experience. We were once discussing what were the odds that a carbon-based universe would be formed. Why not silicone or iron, or why aren't we made of mashed potatoes? Well, I guess that would be carbon, wouldn't it? And I do know people that are made of mashed potatoes. But suffice it to say that, like flipping the quarters, the more times you flip them, the more times, the closer and closer to the mean you get. The realization is that only a carbon-based universe would survive. Something way out on the tail, some really odd thing like, there are lots of probability paradoxes that I could discuss and may do that before the end of the program. But let's consider how much energy and coordination it would take for this to occur. Man now possesses all the necessary science to build a functioning human body from scratch. That's right. Human skin, organs, even blood can be replicated and assembled in vitro. There's one problem. He hasn't figured out how to make it live yet. And he has countless billions of examples of the process going the other way. Spirits leave bodies all the time, many times a minute, all around the world. But spirits also enter bodies as well. And for a long time, they have been doing so at a greater rate than they have been leaving. As far as we know, however, the entry process is always as an infant, without the human body capable of feeding itself, protecting itself, or even respirating by itself. For many months after the human form is shaped, the new body must breathe amniotic fluid until the lungs are capable of processing air. And then they can not even operate any of the appendages of their body for months until they reach out and discover their own foot for the first time. That's a really cool process to watch. But if we consider the idea that we are this eternal being, you know, we're coming to the earth to have a mortal experience, gee, that's a heck of a way to start out, don't you think? By the time the body is ready to process the thoughts of the spirit has forgotten why it came in the first place. And that does not change the postulate, however. The greatest challenge of any young human, even one young as me, is figuring out what the dream should be. What is it that we desired to be? Some figure that out at a very young age. Beethoven was writing symphonies at age 5, and he had congenital deafness. Couldn't even hear the instruments for which he was writing the notes. And yet he knew what it would sound like. Now think about that just for a moment. He did not grow up in a household, and there was no Beethoven ever before him. No one ever wrote symphonies, even remotely close to what he was writing. His music was considered radical. He was a perfectly polished, accomplished composer with multiple melodic instruments, brass, winds, strings, percussion. He had it all. He understood how all of those sounds worked together to make pleasing, inspirational, expressive, artistic melodies and harmonies. That, my friends, a 5-year-old doesn't do, but an eternal being coming into the body of a 5-year-old and being able to recall his previous lives as a composer, because the life wasn't here, he didn't tap into any previous life from this world. It wasn't a reincarnation of another composer. That music was written somewhere else and brought here. Figuring out the purpose of life might be easier if society would teach the youth to reach backward toward their dreams and try to remember what it is they wanted to do when they got here. I've spoken to hundreds of people this week. I asked most of them what their dream was. Not one person could recall. Not one. Nearly all of them hated their jobs. They didn't have the right spouse and couldn't understand how the economy got so bad so quickly. They felt completely out of control. They expressed that they were completely out of control of their life condition. And they had no idea, short of maybe wanting to go to Italy on vacation, what they wanted to do with their lives. And these were not children, people. These were people my age, your age. So why don't modern free societies work on figuring out the purpose of their lives? Fear. Well, that's the simple explanation. Leaders are often afraid of letting people think for themselves.
We have to go.
Re-election becomes unsure that people can think for themselves. And, the term public servant is an oxymoron. Let's face it, to be served by the public trust is not being a public servant. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My first name is Dawn, and I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Listen, I just had a comment about Beethoven. Were you saying that Beethoven was congenitally deaf all his life?
No, not all his life. His deafness did develop, but he had a propensity for it. His infections in his inner ear, and by the time he was 9, he was completely deaf.
Well, now see, that's not the way that I had been told his story. He did become deaf in his later years, and he may have had some deafness problems that I wasn't aware of, but he had his hearing until he became, until later in life, and it was a shame that he lost it, but he did, you know, he was able to draw in nature, which he loved, and he was able to hear for the greater part of his adult life, I do believe.
Well, that makes it even more interesting. I know several adults who started out with hearing problems when they were kids, and usually they learned slowly because they couldn't communicate very well. And most of them surely didn't pick up music as a career because they just couldn't hear the harmonies. The idea that Beethoven was born in the conditions that he was born into and the society that he was born into, and yet made such profound contributions to music, is evident that he brought some skills with him, don't you think?
Oh, no, I totally believe. I mean, Mozart, Beethoven, prodigies. But, you know, the interesting thing about Beethoven was it wasn't so much that he was deaf. His instruments were not up to his profound capabilities. I mean, the piano that we play today, he did not have, and the music that he wrote for the piano was actually in advance of its time because those instruments were not strong, deep enough to accompany or even have the keyboard range that Beethoven needed to really perform his music. I think he actually did help to expand what the pianoforte idiom and the instrument, but he was way ahead of his time as far as the instrument goes. The other thing I wanted to comment about, were you saying that oil is a fossil fuel or that it's abiotic?
I was saying that oil that we dig up out of the ground was originally made by algae, ancient algae that was on this planet. And now we can actually grow algae and harvest it from ponds and process it almost real time, almost continuous manufacturing, so that we can actually produce our own fuel using algae instead of having to drill holes in the ground, pump it out, and refine it.
Well, you know, I think that's a really interesting idea, but are you familiar with Corsi's book, Black Gold Stranglehold?
I haven't read the...
It sounds like you're not familiar with the abiotic theory of oil. It's pretty probable that oil did not come from the decomposition of organic creatures, but it's something that the earth produces naturally as a synovial fluid to kind of lubricate its joints, because these oil wells that they think they've pumped out, when they come back, they find that they're full of oil. Oil is something that the earth produces, and it's a limitless supply.
Well, that's interesting. I have been associated with the oil and gas industry for over 30 years, and there has not been a major oil find since 1974. Small ones, but not what we consider a major find. And all of the big supplies have been found. They're even drilling a 43,000-foot deep hole in the Ukraine right now. But they haven't found anything yet.
Oh, well, I thought the Russians were tapping into that very, very deep oil supply. But, you know, I just wanted to bring this up because it sounded like you didn't know about... Just look into abiotic oil, because, you know, the idea, now, the algae thing makes a little sense to me, even though I think it's abiotic, which means it's not a biological decomposition. But the whole idea of dinosaurs rotting and trees rotting to produce oil is just
not.
Yeah,
it's a little silly,
isn't it? Idiot wrote Shakespeare. Not happening.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not dinosaurs or trees or grass or any of that or old newspapers, I can tell you right now. No, the idea is that you burn an algae oil as a diesel fuel and you get a non-polluting condition. But when you burn petroleum, you create poisons in our atmosphere that would probably, I mean, take hundreds of years to get out of our system. And it's really killing the planet.
When I said it's a synovial fluid for the Earth, when you pull out oil, you're pulling out the natural lubricants of the earth. Therefore, so you're prone to earthquakes and things. It's like a lubricant. It keeps everything kind of shifting instead of collapsing and creating a lot of, like, extreme tensions. And, you know, it's just, it's meant to be there for the earth's purpose. So maybe we don't need to extract it. Maybe the earth needs it more than we do.
Sounds like a good idea. If we can grow it on the surface in water and take the CO2 out of our atmosphere, or at least back to normal levels, and get rid of some of these greenhouse gases.
Energy sources. I mean, the whole idea is just to get away from petroleum. I mean, there's so many other ways we could power things. I mean, you're probably expert on that.
Well, we're trying. We still, everybody's learning every day, but the idea that we're literally using 130-year-old technology to power our vehicles. You know, when Henry Ford first produced the Model T, it didn't run on gasoline. It ran on alcohol.
It was a hemp car anyway. It was made out of hemp, right?
Right. Cellulosic ethanol. So it's kind of interesting that forces of money, namely the Rockefellers, passed a rule called, prohibition. They passed the law of prohibition to prevent the production of ethanol, and that took away the fuel for the car, so the car had to be converted to gasoline.
Well, I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to let you go. But
okay.
Hemp would be the solution to a lot of things, including fabrics and also fuels and also food. So yay for hemp.
Yes.
And they ought to legalize marijuana while they're at it. So have a great evening.
A lot easier to harvest than cotton, too. All right. Thank you, Joan, for the call.
Dawn,
I'm sorry. Internet phones. I've got it now. Wilmington.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Call again. Well, that's why we want listeners out there, because we have to keep our historical facts straight. What I know about the Beethoven story is an example of a highly advanced being coming into the body of a child. And we can call them child prodigies, but the idea that they are very rare is slowly disappearing, or should I say rapidly disappearing, because the youth, the children that are being born today are just amazing. They're just amazing with what they can learn, how they can assimilate, how they can understand complex things and the creative abilities that they have. They're not only keeping up with the accelerating technology, they're fueling it with their brilliance as they come in. Well, anyway, the idea is we can't change society, or can we? Well, sure we can. So let's get started. I mean, society changes all the time. We're changing as we speak. We are not the same nation of communities that we were 200 years ago. So, well, let's get back to the subconscious of the universe, dark matter and dark energy. One of the best examples of this transition is, of course, wave-particle duality. Now, here's the core of the idea. I don't want to get really off into the paradox, but a photon is, on the one hand, a relatively massless particle carrying information in its frequency from one place to another place. Well, it can come out of a laser and carry 5.1 surround sound with high definition, from the Earth to a satellite, and back to Earth, and then into your plasma screen. Or it can bounce down a fiber optic from its source, around the corner, through the neighborhood, up the old conduit that held the wire phone cords to your house, and bring you all the information that you require. Internet, television, and telephone. Or it can originate in a fusion event 10 billion years away and travel all the way to a rather local lens where it trades its existence to stimulate our eyes to tell the story of a distant star. Next time tonight, in fact, when you go out and you look at the stars, realize that you are looking at the distant past, that the fusion reaction that's going on that star is creating a photon that is racing across space at the speed of light. to the rods and cones in your eyes, and then converting itself into an electronic pulse that goes to your brain and gives you that magnificent picture you're looking at. Now, can you imagine if that photon knew when it left that star that it was coming to you? Big difference. But dark matter is not a wave or a particle, at least as we know them. A wave can collapse to a particle and become three-dimensional for our use as a hammer or a tire for a car or a page of a book. Is the collapse of dark matter, the gravity that fills the universe, through which we send our titanium cans looking far and wide for the origins of life? Now that's interesting to think about. It's a great question. If there is information out there that we can access with the right consciousness, then there are two questions we need to answer in order to complete our decision-making process about whether we get one life and one chance, or whether we get millions of chances and add to our skills and beauty, or fear and despondency as we evolve over time. Now, here are the two questions. Question one, if we do live multiple existences, are we capable of retrieving information from past lives so we can increase the rate of our evolution? That would be kind of nice to know, wouldn't it? What do I do with this thing I have in my hand? Oh, it's a guitar. I know that I was born to play this thing. And then once we build the muscle memory in our hands, the next thing you know, we're joining a high school band and dreaming of being a professional musician. That's the thing. That's the question. Are we capable of retrieving information from past lives so we can increase the rate of our evolution? Now, here's question two. If we live one mortal life, we only have one chance, one probationary shot at mortality. Win or lose, slavery or freedom, oppression or complete self-will, total roll of the dice, who you're going to be born to, what conditions you're going to be born under, and whether you're going to be born before your time or right at the perfect moment, or as some people that I know are born well past their time. They were really meant to be born 100 years ago, or even 500 years ago. But if we live only one mortal life, can we in fact communicate with other beings, or a single being, or even the Akashic Records, as some say? Then perhaps we incorrectly assigning the addition of information not included with the human manual. That's an interesting question. We don't really get an owner's manual when we get here. And our parents don't have one either, I'm sorry to say. There's no practice parents. Boom, you're a parent. Here, you're an expert. Now have another and another. And by the time you get to the fourth one, it's so old a hat, you make the older siblings take care of them. No, there's no owner's manual. But are there Akashic Records? Is there a universal being? Is there a God or an angel or a higher self out there with whom we can communicate? And if that's the case, where did they get their experience? Well, let's take the first one first. Sometimes things feel right, okay? Because the notes make a pleasing sound, like music, and they feel good, pleasing. And sometimes they feel wrong because the notes are dissonant and make a sound that is not beautiful. In physics, we call this constructive and destructive interference. Waves that add to one another, no matter how small, will accumulate into something very, very powerful, sort of like the faith of a mustard seed. Added at exactly the right time, at exactly the right place, over and over again, and a mustard seed can move a mountain. Waves that absorb each other, like noise cancellation headphones, will annihilate one another and cease to exist. Hence, no production. Not the kind of thing that would be conducive to the survival of a race. So, here's what feels right. This is what feels right. If we are eternal beings, then we are evolving. In fact, we probably have evolved. Part of that evolution involves development without the answer book in our hands. It takes an unimaginable amount of planning and energy to be able to exist as a mortal for a few microseconds of time. We can take 100 Earth years and stretch it out for hundreds of years. We could take 1 billionth of a cosmic second and stretch it out to a very rewarding 60-year life. One of the most amazing episodes of Star Trek Next Generation, by far my favorite. The Enterprise is going through space, minding its own business. Everyone's on the bridge, eating cookies and drinking milk. And all of a sudden, the Enterprise comes up on a probe by itself, drifting in space. Well, they immediately hook the tractor beam to it, and they're going to bring it in and examine it. But the instant they hook to it, it puts Jean-Luc into a coma, and he drops to the floor. Well, immediately, Troy and the physician are over there working on him, realizing that all of his vital signs are stable, but he's out. Oh, he's gone. And somehow, the probe has connected to him. They're working feverishly to separate the probe from him. But every attempt to do so jeopardizes his vital signs. They just have to leave it alone and just make sure no permanent damage is done. On the other side of those eyelids, however, Jean-Luc finds himself on a planet, dropped in. Everybody knows him and has known him his whole life, and he knows no one. And of course, he immediately introduces himself as the captain of the Starship Enterprise, which greatly amuses his friends and family. Yes, Jean-Luc, we've heard that story before. Now, would you go down and help them with the water separators? And so over time, and we're talking time, Jean-Luc falls in love, gets married, has a family, has grandchildren, grows old, and helps them prepare and launch their first rocket. In that amount of time, he learns to play a small little six-hole penny whistle, a little flute. And he has a whole life experience on this world. Meanwhile, back on the Enterprise, the probe finishes having its way with Jean-Luc in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, which is stretched out over the whole time of the hour-long program, because in the meantime, he's having this whole experience down on this planet. The probe releases him and he comes to. And he looks around the bridge and realizes he's back home, but it's been, what, 50, 60 years, maybe 100 years since he's been there. Jean-Luc, being an intelligent man, realizes what has happened, but he can't deny the experience that he's had. And then a little trapdoor opens on the probe, its last automatic move, and it launches a little box toward the Enterprise. Worf immediately sights in on it and is about to destroy it. Then Jean-Luc says, "Belay that order. Bring that to the bridge." They beam it to the bridge. And it's the little wooden box with the little penny whistle. And then the probe goes dark. The last thing said on the planet as he left as an old man, everyone that he'd known that had grown old and died before him came back and said, "Jean-Luc, thank you. Thank you for finding our probe and for resonating with our story. Now we will exist forever as your memory." That's what we wanted. All the subsequent Star Trek episodes, for years after that, Jean-Luc had that penny whistle, plays it from time to time. But if you haven't seen that episode, you don't understand where it came from. That's a very remarkable story, that he could have this whole other lifetime, and from which he draws a perspective in his role as captain of the Starship Enterprise. Don't be afraid to experience that as you reach back into your own experience, your own eternality, through which you have evolved, and from which you have gained your mighty experience. Now, we can savor this life, or we can waste it. The first lesson, lesson number one in the human manual, we must learn to love ourselves. If we can master that one thing, then we will have accomplished much. And all the wars and crimes that have been perpetrated by people, all of them have been perpetrated by people who hate themselves. Wars are not conducted and crimes are not perpetrated by people who love themselves. If we evolve, and we most certainly do, then we do so at an individual pace, not as a race. No, we did not crawl forth from some primordial ooze and then over billions of years stand up straight and develop a cerebral cortex covering our pineal gland. We evolve at an individual pace, each person. Or perhaps, like the quarters string together, we do so in pairs or in groups of pairs. And interesting thing that I've noticed as I travel around the world is I'm noticing that the pairs and the groups of pairs are coming together. They are making choices to go to conferences, movies, take jobs, take vacations, and eventually these souls that are tied together by these invisible to us strings, as it were, are being pulled together. And they're being pulled together at a very rapid pace now, because the pace is quickening and the need of the earth is dire. And these combinations of beings are coming together. And they're realizing that they have the experience that they came here to get, and now they're just trying to figure out their purpose to use the experience for, and here we are. Now, if that is the case, then the odds that we would get a perfect 100-year slot to have the perfect designed life are about as good as all the quarters landing as heads, or slightly better than placing all the parts to a 21-jewel watch in a shoebox and shaking it long enough to assemble itself and come out ticking and on the correct time. In other words, there aren't any odds. It's a design. That means no system would expend the energy to design a single life, but rather a system of lives so that we could gain all the knowledge we require to evolve. To what? Well, perhaps from dark matter to light matter. Now, that's an interesting thought. You know, the subconscious of the universe we were talking about, the dark matter, dark energy. Perhaps it is the recycle bin for all the consciousness that designs to have a mortal existence and is waiting for the right time and right energy to do so. Who's going to argue with that? The phone lines are open. Toll free in Canada, 888 I'm sorry, U.S., 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on planet, off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can reach us. And most of you have free nights and weekends, and we're enjoying both right now on the Pacific. 530-776-5154 or 5185. You Skype users, just use BBS Radio, and Pal Talk, it is BBSRadio_com. We are coming to you live 3 hours on the BBS Radio Network and also on the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. Well, I just said, who's going to argue with that? Not that I would want to argue, but let's just step back a little bit and look at this, you know, because we're kind of looking at this from our perspective. And who are we to say that just because something doesn't show up on our radar screen, that it's dark? Perhaps it is light matter and light energy that is so highly advanced and incredibly high frequency that we actually are considered dark matter to them. You know, after all, maybe we are not the first 5% to make it through to mortality. Maybe we're the last 5%, and they're waiting around for us to make it through so the whole race can evolve together. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Anne from Lake Tahoe.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You just wowed me with your dark matter coming into physical. Anyway,
well, that's good.
I called. Pardon?
I said that's good. I'm a little
wowed by myself. Because I experienced something today which is new to me because I decided to expound some boundaries. And actually, a couple of days ago, I decided I'm going to try to communicate telepathically with someone.
Yes.
And was successful. And
really?
Today, with a group of people that I do not know, we actually all made the intent and the attitude to meet in our spiritual bodies, and we did. And as we were doing that, there was this drawing in where all of a sudden everyone felt totally as one. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Now, I have some questions about the telepathic, though. You say this is with people you did not know, but somehow you communicated prior to this that you were going to try to telepathically communicate with one another?
The telepathic communication was with someone I have known that I haven't seen for quite a while. That was a few days ago. And I think it made me have the courage to know that I can do this, that anyone can do this. That we can connect with people within this world, but that we all have a connection in spirit, in the energy of source together, if we stretch ourselves to find that, to reach for it with that intention.
Well, let me apply just a little bit of science here, because it's really easy to make an extrapolation and say everything and everyone is connected. That's why
Correct. When
I was doing my quarter experiment before, I said, well, let's not thread all the 1,000 quarters together. Let's just do it in groups of 10 and 40 and 50 and then see how that dynamic changes. And it really does change in a very unpredictable way, and you get skewed results that are very much like what we see in human life because we apply desire and because we are intertwined, we're entangled with one another. But to extrapolate and say that all of us, all 7 billion of us here on this earth and those that have passed and those yet to come are entangled with one another, that's maybe a little bit of a stretch. I have a tendency to believe in the medium bang theory instead of the big bang theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are groups of us, families of us, maybe even, what do you call it, Akashic genetics beyond this life that relates small groups of us together tighter than with the whole race. And you just met some
Correct.
To whom you have a very unique connection.
Mm-hmm. And by focusing your attention in that direction, you bring it to you.
Yeah, and I'm seeing that.
A
when you
connection.
Travel around, they're gravitating to one another. They're gathering together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's undeniable. It's just undeniable. So what about the dark matter being the subconscious of the universe? How do you feel about that?
To me, I'm starting to feel that dark matter is the unknown to us in physicality. And we've been taught to fear it, and yet I'm learning that if we draw it in, it enlightens us. With, like you said earlier, Beethoven wrote this beautiful music and symphonies. Because he had a connection into this dark matter or source.
Well, this was the gist of our two questions that we're asking tonight. We're
mm-hmm.
we're saying,
mm-hmm.
From a scientific point of view, do we live multiple lives, or are we able to communicate with all knowledge, universal knowledge that's out there, and in a single lifetime have one amazing mortality? Those were the two main questions that we asked, and we're trying to think through a lot of evidence one way or the other. Because it seems like...
I think we live... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm gonna listen to you for a little bit.
I'm starting to feel that we live on many levels, and whether we're connecting... Maybe at the very top of the line, it's all one, and then it individualizes as it goes down. And our higher self is maybe that highest point with Source, and from there down, we can retrieve information from the different dimensions to what? Push us forward in this life.
Right.
That's what physical life is about. Maybe bringing in the spiritual being into physicality.
Okay. All right, got that. Now, what about, I mean, I meet people in a free society that have literally every advantage that any society from now to Atlantis could have offered their society. And yet
mm-hmm.
they cannot figure out what they want to do, and they're not happy.
I think it's because we haven't learned to find out or haven't made the effort to find out our true self, our essence, and our individuality, and our purpose. And the only way we do find that is if we start seriously searching for that. And as you said, most people are just living to survive, or and they don't even look outside this such limited consciousness that we have here.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, most of the
trapped.
People that start
it's like a prison.
Really, yeah, and most of the people that really dig in, you know, really, you know, take a weekend off by themselves and do some serious thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of them come to the same conclusion. Wait a minute. I've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got that part right, and I think I got this part wrong, and I'm going to do it right this time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I get. And then, of course, their pastor says, oh, no, you only get one shot. One shot, one life, that's it. When this probationary period's over, you're either going to be playing a harp in heaven, or you're going to be shoveling coal, my friend.
I don't buy that one.
Right?
I think we move to wherever we can continue evolving,
yeah.
Whether it's back into this life or to experience life in some other form or way.
But yes, now I've heard that before. That there are higher forms to this one. To come back to mortality means you didn't get something right, and you're kind of trapped in this cycle going over and over again. But I can tell you, I've met some very, very evolved, very awake beings who really don't need to be here. They don't need to have a mortality. And it's pretty clear to me that the reason they are here, and I've read about some of them, Jesus, Moses, Adam, come on, very highly evolved beings. They came here to help us.
Service.
Right.
To help lift us off the rat wheel, yes.
How many of them do you think are here now? Helpers, guides, teachers?
I think we're all here for that reason right now. We aren't all awakening to it, but many are. And I think the children that are being born now are kind of leading the way.
You know, I feel the same way. I think we're trying to ADD them all and, you know, riddling them down and calm down their energy.
And they're geniuses.
Yeah, I think the same thing. Exactly that same thing. You know, it's like times tables. Okay, I'm done with that. Let's go on to the next thing. No, sit down and shut up so the other kids can catch up to you.
I agree. I know. It's sad, isn't it? We should be sitting back and listening to them and let them teach us now. Yeah.
It's a good thing I was born when I was, because I was the ADD poster child. I missed the whole Ritalin thing, so I got to experience life at warp 10.
And become what you are. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm trying to do the same thing. I have a granddaughter who has... pretty severe autism, and we're trying to work with that. And I do see that she does better in school, and she handles social situations much, much better with just a tiny bit of medication. And, you know, I'm not a big believer in it, but I sure have seen her without it, and it's a big difference. I'm not sure that it would be healthy for her in this world to not have some kind of ability to throttle that down just a little bit.
It's a coping mechanism until we grow up and change into the... I think they're so sensitive to the density of this world and the negativity that they just shut down and go within their own world, survive.
Yeah, for me it was about the 10th grade. Up until about the 10th grade, and you know, I was smart enough and passed all my classes and everything, but as far as, you know, not blurting out answers or fitting into the program, not.
Not. Well, I think that's kind of a poster sign for the people that are awakening. Most of us don't want to fit in.
Well,
and
maybe
again, we express ourselves. We express ourselves, hopefully, in a positive way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe it's because we're not from here.
Mm-hmm.
So this first time mortality
here. Another idea,
here,
huh?
A little hard to assimilate right away.
It's a great and important time, huh?
Yes, I believe that. And, you know, I was going to say synchronicity, but it's a symbiotic relationship between humans and the Earth. You know, there are almost 7 billion people alive on the Earth today, more people than have ever lived on this planet at one time. And the Earth is having a little hard time coping with it because we're having an effect on the surface of our planet. But there's no question at all that our consciousness, our intention, does change the matter of the earth. The very minerals of the earth change because we are altering our environment with our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we're here for a reason. Maybe the earth needs us. too.
It needs, I'm feeling anyway, for everyone to become responsible for ourselves.
Yes.
And not look for these saviors or rescuers and all become sovereign to ourselves with respect and love for everything around us and all life.
I couldn't
and
have said
that
it better
not alone,
myself.
Just that alone, if everybody could do that, I think the world would shift dramatically. And
indeed.
A lot that may come up that's going to be bad if we don't change would be transformed into a totally different effect.
I believe almost that very thing, that we do not have to march inexorably toward Armageddon. We can actually walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing about prophecies is they are conditional predictions. This is what is going to happen if you do not change. But if you do change, does that make the prophets wrong? No, it doesn't make the prophets wrong.
No, it was a warning.
Yeah, sure.
It's a warning, yeah.
That's interesting. Most interesting. So, what is Lake
Tahoe
like
right now? Anyway, I called
in
because it was... What is it like? It's beautiful.
Yeah, what is...
Blue skies. We're chilly like you.
Well, the
but
wind it blows
warm
the
in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
No, the wind doesn't always blow up here. It's pretty
nice. It always blows here. We're in the desert.
Oh, high desert life.
Blow from every direction at the same time. Mm. If there were four wind socks on the top of the silos next to this building, they'd all be pointing in different directions.
Oh, my gosh. That's how it is kind of down in the valley for us, but not up here. Oh, you're a mountain man in the desert.
Yeah, exactly.
That didn't make much sense. I just meant you have a sturdiness about you. Anyway.
Well,
I appreciate
it was
very
good
to talk to you, and I really enjoy this show. Thank you very much. I'm enjoying every
you.
Week. It's so different and mind-expanding every week. Thank
yep,
you.
That's what we try to do. Talk radio for the scientific mind. No weak hearts, please.
No weak hearts. We got to give up the weak hearts.
Right, right.
Okay. You take
Thank
care.
Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
For calling. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
So, Anne made some really, really good points, and I love the part about the sovereignty, and we're going to cover that in much more detail as we move forward. This is a three-hour program here at X Squared Radio, and if you're not getting all 3 hours, please let us know. We'll get with your affiliates and take care of that. But right now, we will take a real quick about 4 or 5 minute break, and we'll be back after these messages. Don't go away, because the third hour, we're going to go a little bit past your imagination. We'll be back after this. Down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TBT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TBT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to our final hour of X Squared Radio, September 21st, 2008. We're glad you're here, and we will continue this third hour. It's going to be amazing. Keep the calls coming, because it makes such a difference when we have you participating. And I think we have a caller on the line. No caller. Okay. I must have misunderstood my producer. I thought I heard his voice back there. Oh, there is a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, Brooks. This is Mark from the beautiful land of enchantment.
Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm very interested in your questions and conversation you have going. Very interesting.
Well, what do you think about dark matter being the subconscious of the universe?
That doesn't resonate with me.
Okay.
I think of more of us as beings of light.
Well, sure. But maybe we're not the you know, we're not the first 5% to make it to mortality. Maybe we're the last 5%, and they're waiting around for us to make it through so the whole race can evolve together. Maybe the dark energy and dark matter is actually light energy and light matter.
That could very well be a possibility. As far as previous lives and whether, you know, we only have the one time around, my feelings on it are a lifetime is but a moment, and a moment but a lifetime. And when we say a lifetime, we're putting a linear measurement to an eternal thing.
Right.
Life, we're energy, and energy isn't destroyed, it just is converted. So it could well be that we are living beings of, as the previous caller said, many dimensions simultaneously. And when we say our higher being, it's just our higher self. It's a higher vibration of this energy that we identify as self. And you have different levels of that vibration, different octaves, shall we say, of the same energy.
I see.
And you would bring all that experience. And if, can you remember it? Some can, and some that can access all those octaves are what we call the avatars. Most of us struggle because we're so caught up in this three-dimensional realm and focus on that. How does that sound?
Well,
that sounds about
I do see that some of the people handle this three-dimensional existence better than others. Some live it in despair. And some, at least in my opinion, they don't really get a fair shot. I mean, they're born in captivity, or they're born in squalor and disease and, you know, war-torn countries, and they don't really get the same, you know, shot at living their life to the fullest like you and I do here in this country.
And that may well be that they have the struggle and the perception of the struggle. There's the physical reality of a struggle of survival. But in many cases, the acts of surviving is a lesson in being. Whereas in this country, we're a country of distractions, pretty much. Where instead of looking to live life, we look for a distraction from life, and we're given a myriad of opportunities for that distraction. So it's hard to say. I think the thing about family, spiritual families, or those on the same vibration coming together, it is absolutely true. It's absolutely true. I just sent an email to someone I just thought of her, and I sent her an email, and she sent me one back. She said, "How? I know you knew that I was thinking of you, but how did you know?"
Yeah, there you go.
What can you say? that's the way things
are. Of course
happen.
I knew.
That's kind of, I've already written her before. I said, "What do you expect?" Because that's how we came to know each other to begin with, is that we were on the same resonance. And that when we spoke, it was like family meeting again. And it's someone I had never met before.
Sort of like stringing the quarters together. We have sort of spiritual families, and some of them are alive on this world at this time. I like the idea of existing on multiple planes. I have a little hard time getting my arms around it because I kind of want to, you know, tap into those other existences too, especially if they're more peaceful than this one. And if that's the case, and you have any ideas of getting out of this alive, then perhaps we need to do a better job of getting the word out to those tribes who think the purpose of life is to deliver death and destruction to the infidels, if you know what I mean.
Well, yes. My understanding is the source of all that is creation. That's what my name is for it. Other people call it God or Allah or Krishna. But it's creation. It's not destruction. So those that seek to appease something through destruction are completely on the wrong track because it's opposite of what the intent is. And I had kind of a thought that there was that saying, I'm not sure exactly who, you probably know who it says, I think, therefore I am. Are you, you recognize
sure,
that quote?
Yeah, I remember that. And yet, you know, if we only get one and only one mortal life, and yet we can communicate with others who have had one and only one mortal life, then isn't it a little like the blind leading the blind? I mean, one-timers trying to advise one-timers?
But, see, then you're applying linear time again. And eternity and infinity is timeless. So to try to, you know, to say we only have this one time, well, no. We have all time. So even though, you know, the resonance, say the resonance on different planes, it may well be that part of that existence is of what we would call the past, a past lifetime. And the experiences from that past lifetime or a incarnation to a mortal body. And so then you would say, well, that's a past life. Well, no, it's still this life because it's eternal. So it's kind of confusing, but by the same token, it isn't because it, you know, the time is a concept for regimentation so that we can say, well, this is this minute, and next minute will be the next minute, and next minute just passed with the last minute, but by the same token, it's all the same. It's what is the experience, and it's really hard to verbalize, but do you understand where I'm coming from with that?
Yeah, you're doing a good job of it. I understand that it's not necessarily this exact moment from which we draw. We actually can connect with, I guess you would not necessarily call them simultaneous existences, but there are many existences of this spirit that's Brooks or this spirit that's Mark. My
correct
question is that if those experiences are so radically different in condition, for instance, I don't have two arms, two legs, two eyes, and breathe air, and am subject to 32 feet per second gravity on another world, it would be difficult to draw experience from that world to this world and have it help me through this life. It would make sense, however, that if I was to be an eternal being having a mortal experience, that I would actually have multiple lives or multiple existences on this world so that I could relate those experiences, or one very close to this, so I could relate those experiences to this life.
Well, relate or have a frame of reference.
Yeah, frame of reference. That's a better word.
Yeah, that is absolutely true, because if you were, an octopi creature on a water world, you wouldn't have a real frame of reference to identify, but you may well have been such a creature. And if you ever looked at one and realized the intelligence of them, they probably do have some kind of spiritual existence also, but
you could see how inconvenient it would be.
It's so hard to try to analytically and using mind to try to explain what the concepts of these things. I like the story about Star Trek. That was quite good. And that just kind of shows that a lifetime is but a moment.
Yeah, exactly. But you could see how inconvenient it would be for me to ink up the room every time I got upset. I mean, you could see I just can't bring experiences as an octopus here.
What I wanted to get to is that I think, therefore, I am. What many are coming to realize right now is I love unconditionally, therefore I am that I am.
Oh, yeah.
Which explains a lot more. It's a perception, but it's also something that can't be intellectualized. But it is definitely a thing that's happening, whatever what the experience is, or experience of these eternal beings that we are within the confines of the third dimension are coming to fruition. That this realization, it's within spiritual families, but it's also on a collective basis also. You can call it the Akashic Records, but all these things are coming to this time, this juncture of existence, rather than use the linear space-time.
Why would we reach out and try to do new things? Why wouldn't we just hunker down and try to make it through this life without harming anyone or being harmed? I mean, I think you know where we're going with this. We can talk about it and try to understand the nuances and the religiosities of it. But generally speaking, there is kind of a wave of fear that comes over people when they think of venturing out to try new things. I mean, you remember the parable of the 10 talents, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a story that Jesus told to his disciples. 10 talents were divided between 3 men. 2 of them took risks and returned a profit, and the third, the man that only got 1 talent, put it in a vault and did nothing. He was cursed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the lesson here was to try new things and venture forward as a sovereign being with the idea that you will be successful and you will be blessed, right?
Right.
By the way, what does it mean to be
blessed?
And
why don't more people do it? Huh?
What does it mean to be blessed?
To be blessed is to have that realization that there, even though we are self, there is more than self, that there is this source and recognize it. I guess it is the best way to explain what being blessed is, because if you don't have that understanding that there is more than self, then you're trapped within the confines. It's self-limiting, so you don't. You're blessed. By being blessed means that you have all the possibilities in life that you would look to have, while if you limit yourself, you're self-limited to just what you have, and you can't have anything else because you're only that. Well, you know, you're just what you are, and that's it. And this is part of the fear factor that you were speaking of, where people fear venturing beyond because of they lose whatever comfort they've come to know. The many people dwell in routine as a comfort rather than going outside of routine And fear is the base for that.
Yeah. I know people like that, that they wouldn't take a college course just because it's a college course. It scares them. And yet they love to watch the Discovery Channel, and they love to watch a History Channel. And you're kind of saying, you know, if you spent time in a classroom in a college learning the things that you're learning on that boob tube from a real teacher, in no time at all, you'd have a degree. And your ability to provide for yourself and your family would change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, I've spoken to, speaking of blessings being disguised, I've spoken to many people who have had three or more careers, and most of them were not participating in careers for which they were specifically trained. They just sort of carried forward to the point where I found them. But in every case, the loss of the previous job, although it was devastating, led them to progressively more prosperous jobs. So in a way, the loss of their job was a blessing.
Right. Right. And what that is it's a blessing because they've gone outside their limitations, their self-imposed limitations.
Yeah.
And that's why they're blessed. So that's why it comes back to what is a blessing. It's reaching out, knowing that there's more than what you limit yourself to, I guess.
I have this question come to me a lot. You know, what is the end game? I mean, when we get through learning everything that we're supposed to learn, doing everything that we're supposed to do, evolving to the being that we designed to be in the beginning, we then stop this recycling back to mortality, and we go on to a higher form where joy is even more fulfilling than it is here, but we can't go straight from here to there without a certain level of experience because we wouldn't be ready for it. Is that pretty much the way you feel?
My own feelings are that yes, this we are in school. This existence is a school. I have the understanding that many of the things that we experience here are not available to be experienced as a higher realm being, simply because there's not that much of a choice as a higher realm being. As far as you don't have as much free will. I mean, that's the gift of this existence, is the free will to make mistakes. But the mistakes are also a learning experience, so that even if you make an error that causes you or someone else pain, that experience gives you the insight of having the compassion that of someone having pain or you having the pain, and also coming to love through that. So it's kind of, for me, the vibration of love is the ultimate lesson, because that, as far as I'm concerned, that is what brings you to that higher vibration. It's not an emotion. I don't talk about, when I speak of love, I don't speak of it as the emotion of love or attachments. It's the unconditional sort, which for me, the unconditional should be left off, because love is in and of itself unconditional. True resonance of love is unconditional. And that, it's kind of like, I was thinking of a story to write concerning George Carlin's passing, because he was very adamant about, you know, God being this guy in a cloud up and, you know, looking down, knows everything you do. And that George Carlin passed, he transitioned and he found himself in what we would call heaven. And everything was beautiful. Everything was light and stuff. And he asked, he said, well, am I in heaven? And he had his answer. There was no being in front of him speaking to him. He said, yes, this is heaven. This is where you transition to. And he said, well, you must be really mad. And he said, no, I'm not mad. There was no judgment. You judged yourself. So
exactly,
there was no need for anything else to judge you. And he sees a long line of other beings. And he asks, what's that long line? And so that's folks that are waiting to incarnate back to Earth. And why are they waiting to incarnate? Because they want to experience, they want to have more lessons. They haven't felt that they've attained enough to really enjoy being here. And so he said, well, I don't want to go back there. And he said, that's okay, you don't have to go back there. And he said, well, can you have anything you want? Yeah, I want a steak dinner. Because I couldn't eat anything because of my heart condition, so I want a steak dinner with baked potato and sour cream and all this stuff. And he gets it, and it tastes like sawdust to him. It has no flavor.
Oh, my goodness.
and then he said, well, this is terrible. He said, well, that's what your incarnation was for. You know, you can have anything you want here, but it's not going to be like you're on Earth, because that's where you have taste. That's where you have the emotions. Here you have bliss, you have joy, you have, you have love, but the physical, everything physical, even the pain, you won't have any pain here, but some people find that they miss the pain because it gave them, it's kind of like living in Florida, where...
Uh-oh. I don't know, we might have lost the call. I got the gist of what he was saying. You know, the spice of life is missing, including the A1. So, how does the rubber meet the road here? How do we take control of our experimental life and quit feeling like we are lab rats? Because as it was mentioned earlier, the first step is to learn to love yourself. That means that if there is anything about yourself that you do not like, then you must do one of two things. You either must change your way of thinking about that thing, like your weight or your teeth, or you must do something about it. Don't use hatred of that thing as the motivational force, however. Use love of the improvement as your motivation. That changes everything. Sovereignty means that you are 100% in control of your life condition. Now, that's an oversimplification and something we have covered, on this program many times, but it means that you are where you design to live, what you design to wear, and look the way you want to look, weight and all. Love it or love the improvement and get after it. That's what I'm trying to say. We talked earlier about genes of a human being responding to the environment, and part of that environment is your consciousness. How you look at yourself, how you treat yourself. And I'm not talking about standing in front of the mirror and affirming that I love you, you're a beautiful person. Obviously, if you're lying to yourself, that is not going to get you too far. You'll be fooling yourself, which is a terrible thing to do. But you can look at yourself and say, I want to look a different way. I want to be different. Now, that's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen. The thing that you desire, and desire is a main driving force here, It's the qualifier. We don't accidentally get the things that we want. Doesn't happen. You get the things you want by putting your intention and your attention and your energy on those things. It's a lot more involved than just putting a picture of it on your refrigerator. And don't be thinking about cost either. If what it is you desire requires money, and you start concentrating on the money instead of the thing that you desire, what you've done is you've just thrown shackles around the universe and said, I want you to provide this for me, but you must do it under my conditions. You have to do it this way. You have to do it by giving me $1 million. Then the universe is very handicapped and is not going to be able to deliver that to you. However, if you design that you want something and you know how much you're willing to spend for it and you know what color it is, you better have the details down. Because the universe is going to provide you what it thinks you want. You must be specific. The color, the dress size, whatever it is, that's what you have to envision. And then sovereignty means you are 100% control of your life condition. It means that you are not affected by the universe. Oh, yes, the wind blows and messes up your hair. Yes, it scatters your playing cards around on your little house of cards for your table. But you can always pick the cards up and go right back to it. Don't fall into the trap that many people do, that in order to have what it is you dream, another person must be affected by your intention. That can cross the line into free will of that person. The design of yourself, of your life condition, has to be things within your control, has to be things within your reach, within your mortal existence or immortal existence. If you want to learn it, learn it. If you want to do it, do it. But if you want someone else to learn it or someone else to do it, that gets a little more difficult to do. Well, you remember the experiment about the quarters. So we can take and perform an experiment if you want. Here we are. We have a very a strange election coming up. And there's some amazing things happening in this election. I think for the first time we're really getting a chance to see the forces at work in our global economy. Most of this has been behind closed doors, and it's not been able to swing as violently as it has now. I mean, we crashed the 1929 stock market when people made a move on the market like they have recently. I have not seen a more stark contrast between ideologies of candidates since Reagan and Carter. But however you choose, be sure to use your intellect and your imagination. Listen to the words of the speeches and then ask yourself, what the heck did he just say? And by the way, what does it mean to go to Washington and fight for us? Don't we own the place? How about working with each other instead of going to war with each other every day? That has a tendency to spill over into other departments, like the military, for example. So, when we're talking about the quarters, we were talking about the mean condition of the universe, the average condition. And we realized that we had a normally distributed chance probability of getting heads or tails when all of the quarters were allowed to flip freely as we dumped them out of the 5-gallon bucket on the floor. But then we realized as we started entangling the quarters together in pairs of 10, 20, 50, 100, and then dumping the quarters out, that things changed. The quarters were now not mutually exclusive from one another, but groups of them were entangled together. and had to stay generally in the same vicinity of one another. And when they flipped, their flipping was limited to axial flips along the line of the thread that connected the quarters. They weren't allowed to flip in every direction. And so our population began to change. Not in the sense that we had any less quarters. We still had 1,000 quarters. But the fact that now 50% of them were not heads and 50% of them tails. Now we're getting much wider distributions. That normal distribution curve doesn't go from 48 to 52% anymore. It goes from 42 to 58, or it goes from 41 to 59. It gets way up there, way out wide on the other pot. So the potential of all potentialities begins to broaden. And that is actually what we see with human beings in this world. Interesting that Mark brought up the story about George Carlin having his near-death experience and then coming back and realizing that there were people lined up to come back for a mortal life. And, you know, mortal life is still fresh in the mouth of George Carlin. Satirist as he was, it doesn't appear as though he was overjoyed with his existence on the earth. He wasn't ready to come back. It wasn't just, no, I don't want to go back. It's, hell no, I don't want to go back. I'd rather stay here. By the way, can you serve me up a steak? And Mark said that George said that it tasted like sawdust. And the answer was, well, yeah, you can have the steak here, but the flavor of it, the flavor of life, can only be experienced in mortality. And that's why most beings, when they die, as soon as they're rested, they're ready to come back. They want to do better. They want to try it again. This time they want to be a professional baseball player. This time they want to be a hang glider or an artist or a musician or a massage therapist. This time they want to be a teacher or an engineer, or they want to be a stay-at-home mom instead of a professional singer. You have experience upon experience that we can add to one another. And we build upon that. Now, what happens mathematically is we end up changing the population of the universe. Now, admittedly, we are just one little race down here on this planet, and this is just one little M-class planet. And keep in mind, this is part of the matter we can see, all those stars and galaxy clusters and superclusters. That's only 5% of the universe. 95% of the universe is undetectable to us, so we've termed it dark matter and dark energy. Maybe it's light matter and light energy, and its frequency is so far beyond our ability to imagine or detect that we just call it dark energy. And the sun revolves around the earth, and by the way, it's flat. Not so, because we discovered it. Maybe it will be revealed to us. Maybe someone will learn how to put their two index fingers forward and open the veil and look through to that which makes up 95% of the universe. And then think of it again, as we were talking about in the second hour. Are we waiting for that matter, that we call dark matter and dark energy? Are we waiting for that to collapse into matter that we can see, like wave functions collapsing into particles into our three dimensions? Because we're all about three dimensions here, and if you're not third dimensional, you're just not with it. Maybe not. Maybe the other 95% has already gone through, doesn't need any more mortality. They're already evolved. And we're actually the last ones through. Well, far be it from me to dilly-dally or to bring up the rear. But I can tell you, from my experience, there is a broad range of life experience here on the earth right now. There are ancient souls here. And there are very young ones. There are souls, spirits, bodies, individuals, if that's what you want to call them, blown around by every wind of doctrine. You could sell them a refrigerator next to a glacier. You could sell sand to someone who lives in the desert, because all they need is a good story and they're ready to go. Others, much more life experience. Call it common sense. Call it age, wisdom. You can't sell them. You're not going to be able to convince them. It's not that they're apathetic. I think far from it. There are apathetic people, people who just do not participate in this mortal experience. But there are others who sort of, well, consider it this way. Suppose the freeway was filled with scooters. I'm not talking about mopeds. I'm talking about the little battery-powered scooters. You know, the ones that run over your heels in the line at Disney World. The whole freeway is covered with them, except for one lane. And in that lane, you get to drive a Viper. That's what it feels like to be here in this world. Wealth of experience behind you. If you could just reach back and get it. Let's see if we can do that. We have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
Hello, Brooks. This is Will from Virginia Beach.
Hi, Will.
And
how you doing?
I'm doing all right, actually. I have a lot of information that I've been collecting for the last year and a half, and recently, there's a story of something that I think I even heard you say on your show one time, because another caller called up. Have you ever heard the story about the Batal?
Oh, I think I have. Go ahead, though.
Well, there's a... It's even on YouTube. It's an actual contactee from the Andromedans named Alex Collier. Have you heard of him?
No, I haven't. Enlighten me.
Oh. Yeah, if you go on YouTube, just Alex Collier interview him. He has been contacted by the Andromedans, which is a neutral entity, or at least ETs, that have never had anything to do with Earth. I mean, the Pleiadians have done something to the Earth, but they're neutral. So they came and talked to this guy, and there's a thing called the Batal, which has a lot to do with what you're talking about, reincarnating and multidimensional level.
Uh-huh. Well, am I close? I mean, these are just thoughts that I've been throwing out there tonight, trying to stimulate the mind of the scientifically inclined.
Well, this is a very interesting story, because it's saying that this is what he's telling, what the Andromedans told him, which they don't even know much about the Batal. They just know basics, and the basics is a fifth-dimensional entity, they quicken to the 11th density so quickly that they pretty much had almost every knowledge that they could think of, and then they actually, you know, because they could look through all the levels at that 11th density, that they chose to come back to the third density on this planet to trigger something that's going to be cosmical. In other words, like, just the entire everything is going to be affected by on this planet, and that's exactly
wow.
what they said. And that this woman, that she just talked to you about the actual, the different levels, and also the, you know, you were talking about the star children and the servants that come down here. Well, supposedly
right.
these all are these servants.
Oh, how about that?
And but there's a possibility that it could be every single person on this planet, or it could be particulars. That was not, like, given exactly if it was, like, the entire population of Earth that come down here, or just several or different, you know, different ones all over different, like, you know, parts of the locale on the planet. But I would love to know if that's the truth. And if it's the entire population and we haven't figured it out yet, then that'd be a very interesting thing to finally realize that.
Well, if it's the entire population, I think I think some people got it wrong, or they got sidetracked or something, because I don't think the violence that we're experiencing right now in the world is part of that design. I really don't.
Yeah, I look at that too, that if someone that actually have a higher self that far up and have gone, their soul has gone that far up, and then they're coming down to actually do violence, that would kind of be a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, we've
but
had
remember,
a corrective...
Remember, we all forgot.
Well, there's been corrective situations like that in the past. You read about it in the New Testament. When Paul got off on the wrong track persecuting the Christians, and then the previously crucified Christ comes to him and says, "Hey, Paul, you're on the wrong track. I'm going to take you down for 3 days, and when you come back, you're going to be my apostle."
I've heard that story. I like that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, if it really is true that some of these servants who are supposed to come here and help the planet have actually become indoctrinated and now they're terrorists blowing up pizza parlors, I think they're on the wrong track. I think it's time for, somebody to step in and say, enough. You know, this is not what we had in
right.
mind.
Well, that's why I think it's particular, actually, entities that come down here, not the entire, because the entire also, I've heard that many children are coming down here and being, like, very, having different defects. That's a possibility of because their soul is so new because of our overpopulation.
Well, yes.
I've heard that story.
There are more people living on Earth now than have ever lived here before, and I think the Earth is capable of bearing it, of feeding them, of housing them. If we would just move people away from the coasts a little bit, there's a lot of flyover country, and if we would, become more agrarian instead of packing ourselves into mega cities that are all full of pollution, I think we could probably make it, even with more people on the planet, if we learn to live with her.
I've always wondered about that too, but I've thought about the more people have to breathe oxygen and exhaust carbon dioxide, and the more carbon dioxide and not enough trees and plants to make, photosynthesis to make the oxygen, we're not going to be able to survive. I've heard that. That's a scientific fact, that we are at a low carbon dioxide level.
Yeah, but if we planted algae to produce our fuel instead of burning petroleum, we could go a long way toward correcting that situation.
And I actually, when you brought that up too, I've heard of that too, and I never knew about that possibly being where oil came from, but I thought it was like a new technique to get fuel. So you're saying that possibly be how oil came about in the first place?
Yeah, and I've heard the abiotic story before, another way that the oil actually comes from deep within the earth, but I can tell you the mineral content, the actual assay record of the oil itself, does not support the abiotic idea that oil is that ancient. I do believe, though, that the record will bear out that oil was originally created by algae, just turned it directly into oil. And you have no idea how 1.5 billion years of algae could not only form an oxygen atmosphere, but can form enough oil to seep into the deep places of the earth and make a reservoir like that. The crime is that we're digging it up, shoveling it into our gas tanks and diesel tanks, and burning it. That's not what it's for.
Yeah, I know we have different levels of energy engines that we can make. I mean, there's so many H2O, water, I've even heard of actually, of course, there's the corn, ethanol. I like the fact that you brought up the prohibition. I never knew that was the reason why they did that.
That's why they did it, my friend. Cars did not run on gasoline. They ran on alcohol.
That's...
Alcohol was a main competitor with oil. And when oil was discovered that they could refine it into gasoline, they needed a market for it. But guess what? Cars didn't run on gas. They couldn't sell it. So they went to Congress and passed a law outlawing the alcohol. Boom. Instant market.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, I'm sorry, Will, I appreciate the phone call, and I love Laguna Beach. Used to go down there to, I think it was Hugo's on the beach. Great restaurant.
Yeah.
I love the coves around there. It's very beautiful, beautiful turquoise water.
Well, if anything in the future, I guess I'm trying to get at least one thing that actually is a new thing on the internet that actually a lot of information is on is a new forum. I don't know if you ever heard of Project Camelot.
I have heard of Project Camelot, yes.
Well, there's a new forum, which is a Project Avalon, AVALON.net, with a whole bunch of information with a lot of like-minded people like me and you, and it's a lot of information given by thousands of people that are members of this forum, and we want to more or less try to use this forum to actually get more information out there and awaken our entire planet, because we need it.
Excellent. What is it? Avalon.net?
Yeah, ProjectAvalon.net, one word. And you just click on forum, and then that's where you can get information such as, I mean, there's all bunch of threads, like a regular forum, and I'm telling you, I've been on it every single day since it started on September 6th, and it's more or less like rising, like big time, with actually people viewing it and actually becoming members and giving their 2 cents, and it's very, very, very awesome. And another thing I want to say also about the Patal, if you don't want to look at that, Alex Collier, and then he's getting Andromedan, and then the word is PAA, then space TOL, and that just astounds me that actually that's a possibility. It's awesome. Thanks a lot, Brooks, and I'll see you at least. I'll hear you next week. I see you every damn week. But thanks a lot.
Oh, I appreciate that, Will. We'll talk to you next week. Bye bye.
All right.
All right, Earth Explorers, September 21st is in the can. We'll let the next host come on. We appreciate you so much for coming on and for participating with us. We'll have this archive up tonight, and peace to you. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.